We are recording.
And welcome to Passions for Life, where your hosts, Natalie Z and Travis Schultz, pull back the curtain on your favorite show you always denied watching. What was it?
Passions.
That's what it was. We're here with our friend Ben Hayes. You may or may not remember him. He's done every show.
Except one or two. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
He's still in quarantine.
Still in quarantine. Yeah, but he'll get out someday.
And this is another remote cast.
Yeah.
Covering episode 358 of the Passion Program. The Passion Soap Opera.
Yeah.
Pull back the curtain. Is that, can we say that anymore?
Why?
Like, it's, hold on.
It's a Wizard of Oz reference, is it not?
Yeah, I think
that's
what it is.
Where were you going with that, darling?
I don't know.
Shit of everything.
Maybe I still have residual edible. I don't know.
No. On my travels, I've rediscovered my love of coffee because I've been drinking tea here at home because coffee is a bit of a pain to make. And Amy, as you know, doesn't tolerate caffeine. So we don't have like a coffee maker. But the place we were staying had one of the Nespresso machines, and that was amazing. So now I'm like, I need to get back into making coffee. What do you guys do? Do you have a drip machine or do you have a French press?
It's not hard.
We're drips.
We have a drip machine.
I thought this was going to be a much deeper topic. Okay.
One of the things I remember, fondly about the times I went to Europe was I would not drink coffee. I would go get an espresso.
Right.
And it was delicious and it gave me exactly the vibe I needed. And
yeah, so damn good.
Yeah, I think there's something really romantic. Once again, and my romanticism, I think there's something really romantic about a pour over or a French press, something like the act of putting you know, a great deal of time and energy and love into this drink that's essentially a drug. We've had some pretty, over the quarantine/COVID times, we've really gotten into, and we've gone through waves, but there was a moment where we really got into the nature surrounding our house.
Yes.
We
had some interesting stuff happen.
We had a lot of really, there was a family of birds that we became very invested in. The whole family, all of us, all three of us were sort of, borderline obsessed with their goings on because there was a nest.
Yeah, we'd sit outside and have our dinner and they would be feeding the babies at the same time. And there were crows that lived, our neighbors have this monstrous tree in their yard, like a 100-year-old tree, and they were at the very top. It was so fun to see them flying around. And one day I went outside I was just doing stuff outside, and I saw one laying in the driveway.
I was just going to say, Travis, this is going to be a fucking sad story. I don't want to know it. I can't handle it.
It gets funny. Don't worry.
Okay, good.
So, you know, I'm like, oh, man, this sucks. And
was it a raven? Or a crow?
I thought they were crows. But when I saw it up close, I thought, man, these are a really beautiful bird. And I look up and, you know, one of the parents is like sitting in this tree just watching. And then I realize that the whole family is watching to wait for this thing to get up. And I like roll it over and I'm like, oh, guys, this one's not getting up.
We think it's the mom, something. Maybe.
Or the dad. Natalie thinks it's the mom. I think it was just the bird learning how to fly and smashed into
something. It was too big. It had to have been one of the parents.
They are big birds.
This is monstrous. Very big.
But I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, can't help but how beautiful it is. And, you know, I'm like, you guys need to move on with your life. So I threw it in a bag and I got this idea.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, Ben, I'm sorry.
I got this idea. So I put it in this bag and, I put it in a cooler
Oh, God.
Some ice on it.
Some what?
Some ice. And okay. I thought, I got an idea here. I'm going to call up a taxidermist. Because this is a beautiful bird. And it's become part of our family. So, you know, and this is COVID times. And I'm like, I go Google some taxidermist in town. And I find one. And I call him up and leave a message. And the next day, they call. And the guy says, hey, we just opened up for business. What can I do for you? And I said, well, I found this. I think it's a raven. He goes, well, if it's a raven, I can't do that by California law. And I go, oh, okay, then it's a crow. And he kind of goes, well, and I said, no, I sent pictures because that's what you said in your message. And he's like, okay, well, let me look at him. He goes, yeah, it's a crow. Actually, it's not a raven. And I said, you know, I told him the whole story. We watched him growing up and now it's dead, blah, blah, blah. And he said, you know, we can do this. We can do the head. We can do the claws. And I said, okay. And he told me the prices. And then I said, what about the whole bird? And he said, it's $500. And I was like, oh, man, that is a lot of money.
And he's but it's a like, gift that keeps on giving. It's
right.
But
you know?
It's also COVID times when we weren't working and we didn't know we were going to get another paycheck. Yeah. And that seems very...
Maybe a DIY taxidermy.
Oh, God.
It's fucking awful.
We don't still have this bird, do we?
No.
Okay.
But the guy told me. The guy said, because I said, look, man, I haven't worked in 3 months. I really can't justify spending this much money. And the guy said, look, I totally get it. But he said, you know, if you put that thing in the freezer right away, you can keep it for a year.
Nice. It's like spaghetti sauce.
Said, yeah, I said, wait, what? And he said, yeah, people have gone on hunts and they've or lost a dog or something. And I told him, you put it in the freezer early enough and we can do it a year later. And I was just, I had no idea. So, you know, those listeners out there, if you lose a pet or something and...
If you've grown fond of the nature around your house and you happen upon one who's deceased and you're feeling... I mean, really? We have feelings. I had definite feelings. When I saw it, I felt very broken up to this family. Yeah. And then, conversely, we had a family of... or a mama dove right outside of Reagan's bathroom window. And this was months ago, and we were like, oh, this is so incredible. She's laying it. We watched the dad build the nest, and she got in there, and she laid her eggs, and she was in there. And find out doves are notoriously shitty parents, and they do two eggs at a time, and the babies usually die because they're such bad parents. Oof. So we were devastated because one of them didn't make it. And then another dove moved into that nest, and we were like, oh, I guess, okay, we're going to do this again. Mm. And we got kind of excited. And then a third fucking dove moved in after that dove left. And we were like, okay, enough. Four mama doves use that nest to have babies. And now the nest has been destroyed by somebody who lives in the house. I'm not going to say who.
You guys, you got burned by love and burned by dove.
Ooh.
Episode 10. Sorry, I've been thinking about that for about a minute.
You haven't been looking. Becca. Speaking of bird mites.
Becca.
I think one of the reasons I think we are stalling because we have all agreed prior to the show that this episode is a bit slow.
Of a clunker.
Yeah.
So, Passions 358.
The best line I've heard so far.
All right, say it again.
Becca. Becca. Up and about at the very crack as he looks down at her butt.
Yes. Yes.
God, I loved him so much.
Why couldn't we all
Why couldn't
like
we
him?
Get lines like that?
Maybe we did. See, and this is what I was thinking. Maybe we did get lines like that, and we just fucking didn't realize what gems we were being handed. I don't think we did. I think we were smart enough to know that we were eating a bunch of shit.
The first thing that I wrote, which could have, I'm not sure when I wrote it, but it was at last a day has passed.
I wrote Gwen changed clothes, and it's actually a cute outfit.
Yeah.
Well,
this is my thing with the episode. I want to know from you guys, because clearly Showtime is like a day could be 20 episodes, right?
We did that a few times, like during the parties.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the weddings, funerals, parties.
Double weddings.
Double weddings specifically. Well, just so before we answer that, to go over We're not a recap show. I know, but just the reason that this episode is such a clunker and we're so mad at it is because it's basically just like a regurgitation of the episode before. It's an episode full of flashbacks. It's just reminding you of shit. It's like everybody got tired and was like, well, let's just write a bunch of flashbacks so we don't have to write new content, which
it's,
I can see.
It's a middle of the week episode.
It's a middle of the week episode. But as far, so yeah, we're still in the Crane Mansion. We're still, everything that's happening has been happening. There's no like new thing to introduce. So there's no need to recap. But to answer your question, Ben, it was for me, and you can answer on your own track.
I will.
Oh, okay.
I will.
Okay. That was weird.
I don't need your permission to answer on my own.
Okay, Travis.
Wow, Travis, you need to settle down.
Stop talking.
Yeah.
For me, it was just about changing hair, makeup, wardrobe, because after a while, I remember Andrea was so cute. It was Andrea or Kim, especially for the really long party scenes that would go weeks and weeks and weeks. Andrea would say, this dress can walk in itself.
Yeah.
Because it did become like a totally new entity all on its own, the wardrobe. I was just, we'd get really sick of wearing my hair the same way, of wearing the same dress, and especially if it's not super comfortable. And it just really does kind of psychologically start to, it feels like COVID times where you're like, what is the day? What is the month? Where are we?
I remember when we were doing the wedding stuff with Lindsay and I, and that it was exciting because I got to wear a tux, like a really great tux. And I'm like, man, this is fun. This is like, this is when you're excited about wearing a costume. And man, that shirt, it would get browner and browner from all the makeup around the wrists and the neck.
Yeah.
And it would get stiffer and stiffer. It wouldn't get softer. It'd get stiffer because they were bleaching it and dry cleaning it every day. Because it was just, and because I would stand in this thing for, 12 hours and sweat in it. And it was like, again, it was like, like breaking the shirt open to put it on in the morning was just, you didn't look forward to it. Here was this tux that you loved and was a beautiful tux. And by the end of the show, it's a rags.
That's junk. The other thing, something that you love, like, and it didn't happen with me a lot on this show.
So funny.
But if you happen to get an outfit that you really loved, and this is the way it works on all shows.
Yeah.
Is the ones you love the most, you're in for 10 minutes.
The least amount of time.
And the ones that you're like, yeah, this is okay, you're in for the whole like months. But if you happen to wear something you really love for that amount of time, by the end, you want to burn it.
It's of course
so ruined for you.
Right. I mean, think about doing like a Elizabeth movie and the stuff you have to wear.
Well,
and like, what do you do when you're sitting around? And that's movie time.
Yeah. Production. That's like slow. Well, I remember
a lot more sitting around. At least we were working
ish.
Like the famous blue pantsuit, you probably wore at least 5 days in a row, right?
I probably wore three to four for sure. Cameron Diaz talked about when she did that movie. I think it was Feeling. I don't know her. Oh, no, I do know her. I do. Sorry. She didn't tell me this. This is a press thing. Finally, I got my name dropped and I was just under.
Oof, I was wondering.
Yeah. She talked about when she did that movie, Feeling Minnesota. Where she wears a wedding dress the whole time, that by the time she got to the end of it, they let her burn. I mean, I don't know that they let her burn it. She decided to burn it. I don't know if that's lore. I can ask her next time I see her.
Yeah.
I understand the sentiment. I remember reading that before, and it was a long time ago before I started working regularly. And I was like, well, that's kind of a shitty thing to do. That feels like a bit of a bratty move. And now I get it. You like, it becomes your enemy. This thing, you look at it and you're like, fuck, put you on again, especially wedding dresses.
Yeah.
Like, man. I wore wedding dress for like 3 episodes on the Detour, and that was enough. It was good. Mm-hmm. Done.
Yeah.
Yes, the Detour on Hulu. So do they give you for that blue pantsuit, did you have multiple or was it just the one?
Great question. I want to say the blue pantsuit was probably just one. I know that on other shows, on like primetime shows, we have to do multiples.
Yes.
I mean, depending on the show, the Detour always had multiples because we were doing a lot of stunts and I was in it a lot, whatever it was. I was generally going to be in it a lot, but I don't know, Travis, what did we do?
Well, what I did, like in the beginning of the show, I had stuff dumped on me. Teresa that did this trilogy of shit being dumped on me.
Like, I have Polaroids. I'm going to put the money on stuff.
And what was it? Fish guts and
blue paint.
Eggs, and so
fish guts.
That was the worst because I did one day where it actually dumped on me. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, everybody stop. And now it's take pictures of everything. Mm-hmm. And let's figure out how to clean him up enough, but not too much so that we have to shoot him upset now for this outfit for days. Yeah. And that was the worst because then I'd go to work and I'd have to put on the sweater that was stained in blue paint and walk around all day in that outfit. So that's when it sucks. Yeah. And then like the fish gut stuff.
Yeah.
And that was a day that was very hard for me. Where I had to work that whole day in the fish gut stuff. That was the thing that they did give me a break on. I only did the whole day in that stuff, and that was it.
Yeah.
The paint was several days because they could, that would stay on the outfit. But that fish guts, man, I sat there in my chair, I remember, after it happened, and I would just close my eyes and just meditate to keep myself from barfing. Because, I mean, it was in my underwear. It was like in my crotch.
Ugh.
Vinegar, because they used coleslaw.
Okay.
That was the thing they could figure out. They were like, what's the thing that isn't going to make everybody puke and leave the set, but we can still look like fish guts? They did a great job.
Props were great.
It was hard. It was something.
They had a very hard job, and they were always so, I mean, they were the ones who were the professionals showing up to a fairly amateur. No, I mean, the only thing that was amateur about the show was the writing. Like, even the, like, wardrobe, hair, makeup, everybody, well, hair. but everybody did a really good job in terms of, like, you know, the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if this is, I'm going to try to explain this. When people are shooting something like in prime time, like, you have multiple costumes because, like, if you're doing a scene where you get blood on you, then they cut and then they go either clean the actor and then change into the new outfit to do it again. You have a limited number of times you can do this. Like, you may have like five shirts. So that's how many takes you get. That's how many opportunities you get to film that particular effect.
It's funny how it makes things go a lot quicker when you know you have a finite amount of stuff. Like, it happens with stunts a lot. Like, if you have to do a stunt and everybody's like, listen, this is one and done. We don't get a second chance to do this. It's phenomenal how often it goes right because it has to.
Because
and you're like, well, wait a minute. Can we just do this all the time?
Everyone,
can we just make it go right all the time? But you sort of have to be up against a wall to not, like, I guess, for everybody to be working on all cylinders. Does anybody want to talk about the locket? I'm skipping ahead a little bit.
No, I mean, I want to hear what you have to say about it, but I actually have nothing to contribute to that. I will react to you.
The payoff comes later. So in this episode, and really I only have, for this episode, I only have Crane Mansion stuff. I don't even know what else was going on in this episode.
I have stuff at the wharf, but we can get to that.
Okay. So there is a scene, there's a moment in this episode where there's a lot of talk about, oh, fucking Sam Bennett and Sam, you know, Ivy.
Don't talk bad on Sam.
Clutching her pearls about talking bad on Sam. And if anything were to happen, fucking, I don't care. But she has this necklace.
It's so weird.
And it's a locket. And she opens the locket and there's a picture. There's a baby picture I'm assuming it's Ethan.
It's me.
And on the other side is a picture of Sam Bennett, like a headshot, basically.
It's like from one of his... James Hyde, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just right there. And she wears it all the time. And when I saw it, I thought, oh my goodness, is this the famous locket that comes into play later for Travis's embarrassing film festival entry, which was, and I can't believe you didn't win, worst use of a prop.
Oh.
You remember this, Ben? Were you around?
I wasn't around for this.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Well, Ben wasn't so the locket comes in play in a very big way, and by big I mean too many fucking episodes of this locket. And we won't give any spoilers because it's pretty wonderful what happens.
Jesus.
But just know that this is foreshadowing.
Right. Okay. That's good to know because you guys are well ahead of me story-wise. I'm just learning as I go.
Right.
We are. Right. Another thing that I learned.
It's good you're not picking up on it as a viewer.
Yeah. Well, I just was like, that seems like a really not smart way to keep a secret.
Yes, well, that's all you need to know.
And secrets destroy people, so
right.
Yeah.
Freaking harmony.
The other thing I noticed in this episode, or learned, I guess, in this episode that I never knew, maybe I didn't remember, Ethan dumped Gwen on their wedding day?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
A dick.
Yeah, that's when I, at the end of this, I was like, you know what, Luis is right. Ethan is not a good guy.
Not a great move, bro.
And that's what goes back to my comment in the last episode about the doe-eyed choice that I made. It was just like, he doesn't know any better.
Well, it also makes me angry. It makes me angry that I played, I don't know how else I could have played it, but that I played these scenes the way I played them. Like, I mean, what could I have added? But like, fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
What I should have said. Like, yeah. I'm sorry that your aunt / girlfriend is dead. But
like, what if the Winthrop wealth was drying up?
The
Hotchkiss wealth was drying up, and this is what you needed to do.
Then we should have been scheming.
What I'm saying is, wouldn't that be much more intriguing?
More interesting.
Yeah.
Like if it's like if then Rebecca is like, Gwen, you're our running only out of chance. Money.
Exactly.
We're going to lose all our land. We're going to lose all this. Like,
you're attacking on two fronts then, because you've got Gwen trying to get with Ethan, mm-hmm. and then Rebecca trying to get with Ben.
Right.
Right.
Because they're both seducing for the money.
For money.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And maybe that comes out later. I don't remember. But I mean, that just would have been like such a better.
It never does.
Motivation.
It never does. Gwen. It's always Gwen. It's dying on the hill of, mm-hmm. I love this person despite the fact, and maybe because of the fact that he hates me. Like, I just can't get enough of the masochism.
What about that for a double wedding? Gwen and Rebecca marrying father and son.
Yeah.
We should send in a letter to the writers.
To see if they can revive it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right, Natalie, that the characterization of Gwen is a little doormatty.
A little?
A little.
Yeah.
that's generous.
Doormatty.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing with like Reagan. So we're trying to get Reagan to watch the episode so that she could do a recap, and she won't do the recap, but she is now at the point where she's like, can I watch an episode of Passions? And I say no, unless you're going to do a recap, you can't. But then yesterday I was like, you know, I want to get this in. So do you want to do this with me? And she was like, yeah, of course. So we watch it together and I'm like, ooh, this is not going to go on for much longer because the messaging is not something I'm at all comfortable with.
No, it's, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how I'm going to handle that. Now she's addicted.
I will say that I was distracted while watching this episode because at the same time, Ray was watching Frozen, which, surprise, is much better
than an hour
of entertainment than Passions. I kept finding myself being like, oh, is this the song where she's, yeah, it's good.
That's funny, but like a entertainment off between Frozen and Passions.
Right, because I had my headphones in, and I'd look up and I'd pull one out and be like.
Is that your worst nightmare, Ben?
It was.
No, I like Frozen. I mean,
it doesn't. What's not to like?
No, it's catchy songs, good story. I just haven't seen Frozen 2, and Reagan will not let me forget it.
Don't even talk about that. No. I do have, on the like sort of feminist front, I do have a fan letter I would like to read. I've been
buying
a fan
letter. Yes.
Oh, yes.
And I came across this one from...
Oh, it's a long one.
Yeah, I'll read it fast. Tina. This is from Tina.
Ooh, okay.
And Tina wrote me this letter on May 28th, 2001. Dear Natalie, hi friend, long time no see. It's been a long time since I wrote you last. I would have written to you sooner, but my schedule doesn't allow me any free time to myself. I'm writing to you now as a letter of concern. What's this I hear about Gwen and Rebecca causing trouble for Teresa, Ethan and Teresa? I don't like the way Teresa's being treated. You guys used to be friends. I don't know that we were. But now you're ready to claw her eyes out. Wait until Ethan finds out that Rebecca sent the letter to the tabloids. Sorry, Ben, spoiler. Ethan won't have anything to do with Gwen or Rebecca. The same thing happens to all women getting dumped for the pretty woman and vice versa with the men. I'm no different. You just have to find a way to move on. Just remember, revenge leaves a bad taste in your mouth. Could you send me a picture of yourself along with your bio, please? I hope we can be friends. Keep in touch, and I'll be watching you. Yours truly, Tina. So much to unpack there.
What was your reaction when you got it? Like in 2001, Natalie Z, what was your reaction?
I grew to love these kinds of letters because there's so much there. And it's real. Like I'm looking at the page right now and it's handwritten in cursive. And like, it's so different from like looking on a message board or looking at a Twitter post of the anonymity of some asshole just, you know, spewing their shit at you.
You suck.
Yeah. This is like, this woman took time out of her day to be very sincere, also menacing, also a little bit delusional.
I don't think that delusional.
Well, no. She's writing to me. She's writing to Dear Natalie.
That's what's very interesting about this letter is because it's writing to you as an actor, yes. Or writing to you as the character.
Yes. And that's what's so fascinating about these particular types of letters. So to answer your question, Ben,
it's like she's trying to play along.
Yeah. My reaction was always sort of that of confusion. Frustration. But also I was fascinated. Right. Because there's a part of me that would be sort of frustrated and angry that people didn't like me. You know, you get into this business because you want people to like you. I mean, anybody who says that's not true is bullshit. Yeah. And, I knew that there was no way people could. I mean, why would you root for this character?
It's hard.
I tried. I really tried. But also, like, the conflation happened a lot. I mean, a lot. More often than not. I want to say in all of them, the letters. There was this conflation of, like, not quite grasping that these were two separate entities, the character and the actor. And I think that now the audiences are so much more savvy about, like, how this all works. And that's kind of gone. That sort of magic or that weirdness is gone.
Right. It's also that person trying to articulate that in the letter, like trying to nail it down.
But the thing that's ominous fascinating for me is the whole, it happens to all of us. It happened, getting dumped for the prettier woman.
Well, there's some,
it happened to me.
There's a personal experience.
That's why I keep the ones that I keep like this, because I'm like, it just feels so deep. There's something very... At the age I were, exactly. I kept it because I was like, I was mad at her. But also she hurt my feelings, but also I was able to laugh it off.
Yeah.
What's fascinating about this, and this is pretty consistent in all of the fan letters, is that no matter how much, and this isn't vitriolic, I don't think. I mean, especially compared to some that I'm gonna read on the show.
Yeah.
This is very mild mannered, but with all of them, even the like hyper like mean ones, at the very end, it's also completely abrupt tonal shift. Can I get a letter, please, a picture, and will you sign it, please? Thanks so much. It's like they jump out of character and say, anyway, can you just send me an autograph?
Right. Picture? It's like all of a sudden they remember why they sent the letter.
Yeah, they're like, I know.
Right. I need an autograph.
Well, I think, I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever written a fan letter. I have.
I was just going to ask this question.
Yeah. I have not to any actor. I wrote a fan letter to a musician once.
Me as well.
But
Eddie Vedder?
Who?
Eddie Vedder?
No.
You may have heard.
No. I wrote a letter to Bob Mould, but I don't, from Husker Du, favorite.
Yeah. Oh, Husker Du.
Husker Du.
Yeah, one of their albums.
But it was for his later work in the band Sugar. But Anywho, the thing that I realize is that, and maybe I'm wrong here, but do the soap fans, do you think that they feel it more than like fans of a nighttime primetime show?
Yeah.
Do you think it's more like, I mean, this relationship she has to you feels very personal.
It's every day.
It's every day.
You see these people literally every day. Like, who do you see every day aside from your significant other?
Right.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Like, maybe newscasters, maybe, but people don't.
There's a relationship.
Yeah. And it feels very intimate, and it feels like, I mean, now it's reality TV, but it feels you can't not start feeling like you know somebody when you see them every 24 hours. And for a lot of these fans, they watch literally every day.
A lot of the fan interaction, like in person, was this, I know you, and I know what you need, and I know about your struggles. Mm. And it's a weird thing because you're like, I'm Travis and you don't know me. It's a very weird thing. And it's a very weird line to walk, and you learn it as you experience it.
Right.
One of my, vivid memories is when I did a fan event in New York when we just started the show. And this was one of the first times I was stuck in front of a table, behind a table, and told to sign autographs. And there were teenage girls, young girls, that I could see them. There was like a line coming, walking down, and all of us actors were sitting behind tables signing autographs. And I could see them coming towards me and getting excited, like Beatles girls shaking. Excited, like shaking and tearing. And then by the time they get there to my table, they're a wreck and just overwhelmed with so much emotion. And me just being like, oh God, I don't know what's happening right now. You know, in my head, I kept thinking I was just working at Papado's. Like, I was, you don't understand. I'm just a guy that got lucky, and here I am, and that's what I would say. I'd be like, hey, just calm down, it's okay, I'm from Topeka, it's fine, don't worry about me. And I was like, I'll sign this, okay. And they were just like, thank you, oh my God. And I was
I did not know you had that sort of that experience at that age. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy because I was just blown away by it and humbled, but just mostly overwhelmed. Because I just didn't know where to put it. I didn't know how to, and no one really talked to us about that.
No one preps you for that.
No one really sat you down. They talked to you about how to interview, but no one really said, "Here's how you handle the fans." It was just up to you. Hmm. And it was like they just give you letters and you take them home, and they're like, read them and do whatever the hell you want. And it was like, what? And okay, it was very different. And then, you know, I came to find out later that, like, I think Galen and James and all the
Jesse, probably
Jesse and you know, Lindsay, I think they had people doing it, or
they were
taking care of it. And it was such a missed opportunity because I just was so overwhelmed with the job. Mm. That I just really dropped the ball on the fan letters.
Yeah.
And it's something that I totally regret because, it would have been a whole nother side of the job that probably would have had to inform me even more about this thing that I've chosen to do with my life. But it overwhelmed me so much that I just turned a blind eye.
You had to get some distance from it, I think. Right. Because I do remember asking you, I asked everybody, you know, do you guys write? Do you write back? Do you, and I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but so I won't name names, but a handful of people said, yeah, I have an assistant, or one of them had their moms do it. And
I don't even know if that's true, if people did it or not.
They did. I mean, again, we won't name names, but, and so when I heard that, I was like, oh, maybe I can do it. And then I talked to Travis and I was like, what are you doing? And you were like, oh, I don't know. And I was like, you don't what? And you're like, no. You had a very like hands-off sort of, I keep that stuff at a distance reaction to it. And I was like, okay, well, which way am I going to go with this?
Right.
And I ended up responding. I think the first year I ended up answering. I mean, I don't know what I did with this kind of stuff. I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Did you send her a picture in a bio?
I don't remember. I honestly don't remember, but I remember the second year I kind of took a more Travis approach to it because I had one foot out the door anyway. And I was just like, I want to disassociate now.
Right.
Because I'm going to disassociate like fully eventually. And I'm just going to start now. And I regret that as well, Travis. I regret that I just completely cut that line of communication off when I
didn't know how to do it. I didn't understand it.
Nowadays you have Twitter and you have social media that has replaced a lot of that.
Right. And we're both still somewhat hands off on both of those things. And I think that for a different reason, I think that we just, for our sanity, it's best to just kind of, for everybody in the whole wide world,
it's
to be hands off.
To be, yeah. It's funny because Natalie, I remember like in the first couple of episodes, Natalie said, talked about the fan letters and I said, you know, you'd open up the mailbox and they come pouring out and Natalie made a joke like, no, they didn't pour out of mine.
Pour out of mine.
And then what I discovered was I'd be like, you know, to like James and Galen and Jess, I'd be like, man, did you guys get all this fan mail? And then I'd go to their dressing room and there'd be like these bags, trash bags. I'm like, what's that? And they're like, fan mail.
Wait, they were getting more fan mail than you?
They were getting 10 times the amount of fan mail I was getting.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, oh, shit. Oh, jeez. Oh, okay. I don't understand this at all. Like
my fan letter is so like, yeah, it's like, so real.
Oh man, my fan letters compared to Luis's, Chief Bennett, Miguel, I mean, not even close.
And mine compared to yours, same thing. So there's this like caste system of
not even to Mackenzie. I think Mackenzie definitely had,
probably got
Sheridan had more, you know, but man, it was, it's amazing.
That's crazy. Do we want to talk a little bit about the episode?
I mean, what's there to fucking talk about? Yes, we do want to talk about, I know that
I might have had a realization. But go ahead.
Yeah, I would love to hear your, I know that you have some stuff to discuss about the Wharf. Are we still at the Wharf at this point?
Yes, we are. That's what's weird is because morning has broken. Rebecca has shown up with the newspaper. Then we go back to the Wharf, but there's no indication whether it's day or night, but they're still in the same clothes. Mm-hmm. So either we don't care about continuity, which is probably the truth. That's it. That's the only answer. That's sorry. Right. I'm not even going to go the other way.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know.
No, there is no other option.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like, is this the episode where Teresa's writing the email on the,
Yes. This is the email that will,
on the Condor 64,
that will, continue.
Change Ethan's life.
We'll change the show. Change. I mean, this is such a huge storyline in the show. I'm glad that it's starting now. I'm glad that we're at least getting it on the beginning of it. But especially for Gwen's character, this is, well, and also Ethan's character. It's such
pretty big.
And it goes to the very, very end. I did a little sleuthing and watched a couple of scenes from, like, two scenes from the last episode. And it's still fucking talked about.
You mean it's still not resolved?
No, it's, well, no, I mean.
Or do I want to go on the journey? Maybe I should go on the journey. Don't tell me.
If you want.
That's why you're here.
On the passion's journey. Travis, you made a discovery.
I did make a discovery, but, you know, one of the things I've noticed, just because you said the computer thing, and it made me think about how all the phones we used were the wireless in-house phones that we were always talking on, you know?
Mm.
And, you know, to answer them, they were always on their charger. You pick up, phone ringing, you press answer, and then you talk on it, and then you hang up, and then you put it down. But if you notice,
we all know how phones work, Travis.
No, some people don't. Some people are younger
on this
than
show.
Us.
I don't, because I don't hang up the way you would. I slam the thing down every time. I'm like, and I'm like, then you just pick it back up. It's just still not hung up.
I have a
I slam phones down, and I'm like, why?
I have news
why
for you,
did
Travis.
We do that?
I have news for you.
I think we were directed to do that. We were told to do that.
That actually hangs up the phone in real life. If you just put the phone back onto the cradle, it hangs it up.
Oh, man. See, this is why.
This is why you married me.
I was a terrible Ethan.
This is why you married me.
Right. Well, you've said you're kind of like a primary color emotions guy. You're playing love or anger,
hate, or nothing in between.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no easy way for Ethan to pick up a phone. He's either really waiting for that call, eagerly awaiting. It's the most important call of the day.
It really makes it complicated.
I'm really regretting sharing that with you guys.
There's no casual, like, I'm just going to just see who's calling. It could be a wrong number. I don't know. Not with Ethan.
It's like not with Ethan.
Yeah.
It's either the love of his life or his death knell.
And just how we're always waiting. You know, did Teresa call me? I wonder if she'll call me. Did Ethan call me? I wonder if he will call me.
A lot of passivity.
This episode, guys, was like nothing but fillers. It was so frustrating, and this happens a lot. And I'm not gonna lean into it because when we get to one of these episodes, I think it needs to be called out. It's just fucking filler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was basically a reset. It was a reset recap episode that was kind of slow and
Timmy.
No Timmy.
No.
That's coming though, right? I mean,
I thought it was, but
I don't even know if they've moved it down. So in Ethan's dream state, there's smoke and, you know, Teresa is being pulled away and I'm
black and white.
And then we're into the smoke, into the ether. And I just was shaking my head going, what the fuck? And then I thought, wait, okay, this might be something that is related to Louise seeing Sheridan. Okay, this is Harmony. This is this very old, this is place where there's this deep magical history and strange shit happens here. And maybe people's dream lives are actually part of their real lives.
Ooh.
And where, when you dream, they're not just dreams like us. They can change your life. They can affect your life. Like kind of when Louise is seeing Sheridan on the wharf, Harmony, the mystery of Harmony, kind of does that.
So maybe Harmony has this magical vortex,
right? Kind of like, and this is why I think a lot of
Stephen King story, yeah,
right, yes. And exactly. And I think this is why a lot of people were comparing it to
Dark Shadows.
They were comparing it to Twin Peaks.
Oh,
at the time, Passions to Twin Peaks, because it's like this magical weird place where stuff happens,
right?
But it's just like, was that the reviewers making that connection, on their. To make sense of the show?
Maybe.
To try to legitimize
but
it?
We as humans are constantly trying to make sense of things that don't make sense. So,
don't make sense, for example, 45.
Well, there is some of that in the novelization about the history of Harmony. You know, because Tabitha's been, like, she's a descendant of the witch, East Coast witches, so there's a lot of that that's built into the town, yeah.
East Coast
witches. You know, Travis, a dream is a wish that your heart makes.
I think that may be where we wrap.
Wow.
I think
that is going to get us sued by someone.
Yeah, somebody will.
Is that from Pinocchio?
A dream?
You're asking the wrong people.
Yes, I'll ask
you. We don't read Pinocchio.
We don't read Pinocchio.
This Pinocchio? Okay.
I don't think we made a choice.
Oh, it's Disney. It's Disney.
It's just.
Just Frozen.
Yeah, just Frozen. That's where we draw the line.
I'll keep reading the book, and I may be able to speak to that next episode, which we'll be watching 360.
We'll be watching 360.
Episode 360.
We're skipping 358 for reasons that we're not going to tell you. And we're going to go straight to 360. And I promise you won't be lost.
Yeah.
Because I bet you nothing happens in between.
Well, and this is right around Thanksgiving 2000.
Yeah, this aired right around Thanksgiving 2000. So I'm sure the days are all messed up. So that's neither here nor there.
Neither here nor there.
But thank you for joining us, as always. Thank you for
quarantining.
Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for responding.
That was for Ben.
Thank you for emailing. Thank you for. Just being around.
Staying safe.
Rate and review us. It's a great way for us to get what we want.
Yeah. Reach out on Instagram and Twitter. On Twitter, it's at Passions4. Instagram is at Passions4Life. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Passions for Life Pod.
Passions for Life Pod. Thanks. I'll get it one of these days.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can email us at email passions at
Gmail.
Gmail.com. Fuck, guys.
Val's going to have, it's the fires, man. The smoke's getting to us. Val, you're going to have to jump in here and provide.
Sorry, Val. We missed you.
You can send letters and questions to emailpassions@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at Passions for Life Pod and hit the email button right there on our profile page.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Be safe. Be well. We'll see you in the next one. And bye.
Bye.
Later.